Our first speaker is Maria Adviento Borb, Greenhouse Gas Emissions and Yield Scale Global Warming Potential in California, Dry Seeded Rice Field. She's from the University of California, Davis.
Good morning, everybody. Today I'm going to talk about the results of our field experiment in drill seeded rice systems in California. I will be talking about greenhouse gas emissions and global warming potential. But before I go on, I would like to acknowledge our co-authors here. Dr. Bruce Lindquist is in the audience right now, Chris Van Kessel, Jim Hill, Johan, Cesar Abrinilla, and our grad student, Cameron Pidoco. All right, just to give you a nutshell about the importance of studying greenhouse gas emissions and rice cultivation, agricultural greenhouse gases such as carbon dioxide, methane, and nitrous oxide constitute about 12% of the global total greenhouse gas emissions, which is human-induced. And if you look at the flooded rice systems, it contributes about 15 to 20% of the global total methane emissions. Maybe I should talk in front of the low. Okay, yeah. All right. Another important reason why we would like to study greenhouse gas emissions in rice systems is in the recent meta-analysis of 57 papers on greenhouse gas emissions, particularly global warming potential in major cereal crops, which was conducted by Dr. Bruce Lindquist and his colleagues. They found out that the global warming potential of flooded rice systems was four times greater than wheat or maize. That is because the large global warming potential value in rice is due to the very high methane emissions. Now, this information tells us that there is a great opportunity to reduce emission of these greenhouse gases, particularly methane, in a rice cultivation system. All right, for those who do not know about flooded rice, switching gears from upland crops this morning, I'd like to give you some idea what are the sources of methane in flooded rice system. There are three pathways. First, it's methanogenesis. Where's this mouse? All right. This is the reduction of CO2 or acetic acid to methane, and this occurred in the reduced condition or layer of the flooded rice soils. Another pathway is the ebullition, which is bubbling of methane gas from the source, which is the reduced layer, through the flood water and to the environment. The third is through movement of methane gas through diffusion process. Basically, methane production in flooded rice is a net product of methane oxidation, which is an uptake by methanotrophs, converting methane to CO2 in the presence of oxygen molecule, and production of methane in the reduced layer. Now, if you have more production of methane and less oxidation or uptake of methane, that results to more or methane production or methane emission. Now, if you have more methane oxidation and less of the production in this system, you would get negative or uptake of your methane gas. One unique characteristic of flooded rice rice plant is that the rice plant itself serves as conduit or pathway for the release of methane produced in the lower layer of the flooded soil, and that is through the parenchyma cells. Now, imagine you have a microtubing stuck into that deep reduced layer, so methane gas produced in the deeper layer will go through the rice plant. So if you would like to measure methane emission, you have to include also the rice plant inside your chamber, in your chamber. And also water management and organic, of course, addition of organic matter drives the production of this methane gas. What about nitrous oxide emission? Nitrous oxide gas is produced by nitrification or denitrification. Nitrification is So as we all know, it's the oxidation of ammonium to nitrate. This is happening in the aerobic or oxic horizon, or on the surface of the soil. And denitrification is occurred under anaerobic or reduced condition. Now, I'd like to point out here that if you have a flood water and it is reduced for a long period of time, maybe 3 weeks, you would get a complete denitrification process. That means whatever nitrate is available in your soil will completely convert it to dinitrogen gas or N2 gas, which is, you know, it's inherently not reactive. It's not a reactive gas. Okay, just to give you an idea what is a rice cultivation in California, and this is also very new to me because I'm familiar with Asian rice fields. Okay, in the beginning, we prepare the land for seeding. It's either drill seeded or the rice seeds are planted in a row using a drill machine, as you can see here, or the seeds are spread on the surface of the rice, on the surface of the field using an airplane. Can you imagine that? Because of the huge or vast horizon of rice land in the area, they use airplane to spread the seeds. And in this study, I'm focusing mainly on the drill seeded system. And then they flood the field to enhance germination, drain it for a while to control the weed species growing during flooded condition, and then apply the permanent flood for about starting tillering or before tillering and up to maturity. And then after the grain is ready for harvest, they harvest it using a combine, and after harvest, they cut the straw, ground, and incorporate in the field. It's either incorporate, rolled, or just left on the surface. Okay, what are the objectives of this study? First, we would like to quantify the methane and nitrous oxide emissions from drill-seeded field under different N fertilizer rates. These are all synthetic fertilizer in the form of urea and with frequent drain events or drain periods. Also, we would like to assess the global warming potentials expressed as the kilogram of grain in these drill-seeded rice systems, of course, with different fertilizer N rates. All right, for the materials and methods, what is the field we use? We use a rice growers field in northern Sacramento Valley, specifically in Robbins, California. For the agronomic practice, we surfacely apply the fertilizer N. For the irrigation management, we had twice flushing of the field, meaning twice flooding of the field and draining, and then impose a permanent flood, maintain it up to 10 centimeters. And for the rice cultivar we use a Koshi Hikari rice variety that is a long grain and a fancy rice. I believe this is for sushi. They use it for sushi. And for the N rates, we use several levels of nitrogen rates from 50 to 200 at the 50 kilograms N per hectare interval. I'd like to point out that the N100 or the 100 kg N per hectare is the rice grower's rate for this variety. Okay, for the measurements of greenhouse gas emissions, particularly nitrous oxide and methane, we use a vented flux chamber, as you can see here, with a diameter of 30.5 centimeters and with a varying chamber height. Now, we need to enclose the rice plant in our chamber because majority of the methane emitted during that growing period comes from the plant. According to the studies, about 90 to 96% comes from the plant. So it's plant-mediated emission. Also, since we have a very huge chamber volume, which is actually 93 liters, we use a very low-budget fan, about $4. And this is a 9-volt fan so that we can mix the gas before we do our gas sampling. We use a GC, a very conventional way of measuring concentration of methane and nitrous oxide. And for the calculation of global warming potential, we use the current conversion, which is 298 for nitrous oxide and 25 emissions CO2 equivalent in kilograms, which is 25 for methane. All right, for the results, let me first look, discuss with you the methane emissions that we measured during the growing year. So that is from the start of the start of seeding up to the following year. So here you can see we have the dates of measurements. Okay, days of measurements. We have the methane emissions in gram per hectare per day. And I divided my plots into two. We have the end rates and the high end rates here. Okay, now you can see here at the beginning of the seeding period, we didn't see much methane emissions coming. At this stage, the field is dry, And then once we flood, again, there's not much methane going on. However, when the rice plant started to progress, actually around tillering stage, we did see a positive emission of methane. And then it went up to the maximum level, which is around heading stage. And then comes that, went down up to as it reaches maturity. And then after draining, the last drainage event before harvest, that's when the soil was about glistening and very saturated still, but there's no standing water. We did see a flux or high methane emissions right over here. And this is true for the high-end rates. Okay, so you could see here that there's no impact in terms of increasing end rates. They both have this high peak. And then it was short-lived within a couple of days, and then it went down to pre-plant emissions. And we continue on our measurements to get the annual methane emissions, and we found out that there's not much methane going on in there because the field was dry or sometimes wet because of the rainfall, but it did not went down to it did not go to a very reduced condition such that it produced methane gas. Okay, now what about nitrous oxide? For the nitrous oxide profiles, here again you can see the same format, the date of measurements and the emission of nitrous oxide in grams and per hectare per day. Okay, it's a different story for nitrous oxide. In the beginning, we didn't see much of N2O right here during seeding, but after the first flooding, we did see a spike of N2O. And then it was a short leave again and then went down when the level of moisture content is really very low, around 50% of moisture content or 40% moisture content. The second flooding, there was no increase in the nitrous oxide. And then once the permanent flood was maintained, we don't have, again, no N2O emissions. However, after the last drainage event, a week after the standing water was not visible on the surface, and the methane concentration went down to very low levels of ambient concentration, we did see a spike of nitrous oxide, and this is for about 5 days. And then it went down after 5 days or 6 days. And this is true for all N rates. Although in higher N rates, you did see a difference in the magnitude, but the trend is still there. Now, why is that so? Why is it we have a peak of methane and nitrous oxide during this period where, in fact, there is no nitrogen available, or if there is one, it's very small or very low at this stage? We don't know the answer. But we speculate that that could be the release, the physical release of gas from the entrapped surface or microsite of the soil, or a combination of increased nitrification or denitrification, because that time for nitrous oxide, it's not very wet or very saturated, but the moisture is still there, and there are cracks. For methane, probably it's also physical release or combined with methanogenesis. Another salient findings that we got in this data is we need to measure gas emissions intensively during this emission event phase. So if you do weekly sampling, you might not capture these important peaks. looking at the annual emissions, see here for the methane, there was no significant differences among the N rates. However, for N2O, as you increase the N fertilizer rate, you did increase significantly your N2O emission per year. For the N grower rates, we had a very we have small N2O emissions, and if we combine the two gas greenhouse gases, come up with a global warming potential in per area basis, we did see an increase in the high end rates and low in the low end rates. Again, the fertilizer, I mean the grower rate is small. Okay. Okay, one more thing. For the yield, we didn't see any increase in yield if we increase the fertilizer N rate, and the yield scale emission is also not significant. Taking this information, I'd like to point out that the grower rate is also, it was the smallest. Okay, finally, large emissions were associated with rain events and high N rates. A higher N rates of more than 100 kgN accounted for 45% of the global warming potential. Emission increase after 3 weeks of flooding, highest in reproductive stage and during the rain event. Annual emissions were similar in all N rates. And finally, there was no direct effect of increasing fertilizer N in if we look at or if we assess the yield scale global warming potential. That is because of a combination of low yield and high greenhouse gas emissions. And with that, I'd like to thank our funders, the California Rice Research Board and the Mars Incorporated. Thank you for listening.